Welcome to the final episode of the podcast novella, The Big Book, by Brett Casto. Today's episode covers the last chapter, chapter 28. Regretfully, it's a short episode, but here is where the story gets laid to rest, and without further delay, let's just get on with the story. Chapter 28. Then my head exploded again. The force from my kick was enough to finish toppling me over. The castle stones met the back of my head and were being extra unkind tonight. Once again I could see stars whirling about, and this time they threatened to keep me for a while. It was a fight just to keep from letting them take me. The darkness seemed serene and cool, and it looked like it contained a lot less pain than the real world promised me at the moment. I turned my face up into the rain and the wind with a shallow hope that it would help pull me away from the dark tunnel I was about to slide down. But that thing in my soul had to know. It would not rest until it got to lay eyes on Bruxia's wet, broken corpse below. So it too fought for me to pull my body closer to the edge of the battlements. It was a long and arduous task that the slick rain only made harder. And once I had made it to the parapet, the beast had to egg me on to haul myself up so that it could see. It probably only took a few minutes, but it seemed like an eternity inside my head. I laid across the opening and stared down into the murky, foggy blackness. I could hear the water churning down below, but it was too dark and foggy and there was no sign of Bruxia. The beast was calmed, knowing that there was no way that anyone could survive the fall. I sighed and let my head rest against the cold, wet stone, until I was woken up by a policeman. I snapped up, hurting but nearly wide awake and alert, my heart racing 100 miles an hour. I let out a curse, because I'd passed out, and began rattling off the most recent events to the cop. He nodded and I could see the mental notes being taken. It was way too wet for paper ones. He looked around for a second, to make sure no one was going to sap him, removed his helmet and peered over the edge himself. The rain had slacked up enough so that you could just make out the rocks below through the fog. The cop whistled and said, "Well, there's no way he'd have survived that fall. The captain's not going to be happy about this." I agreed, and as the pain and tiredness began to set back in on me, it suddenly disappeared again. I remembered what had caused me to awaken so quickly in the first place, the book. I yelled at him that the case was still open and that I had to run. He tried to protest but must have decided that chasing me wasn't worth the effort. They all knew where to find me anyway. I sprinted down the stairs and jumped in front of the first taxi I saw. Thank the gods that it was empty. I climbed up beside the driver, showed the man my papers and some dough and told him to where to go and how fast to get there. The old man grinned at me and told me to hold on. There was a steady stream of curses that followed us across town, and I almost flipped over the horses as he brought the coach to a halt in front of the castle. Party be damned, and I ran straight through the ballroom and up the stairs. The only gorillas that were left were the ones that were presumably legit, and they let me pass without question. When I hit the library, I started dashing around the room, searching, looking under, over and in everything in reach. I stopped and looked at all the books on all the shelves and groaned out loud. Now that I had stopped for a second and was looking for any other alternative places to look other than amongst the books, my brain started churning away. I stood there with my hands on my hips, vaguely aware that Ed was now in the room and yelling at me. Vaguely aware that he was walking across the room and was really mad. Vaguely aware of a door closing out in the hallway and a knob giving a tongue lashing to a copper. Vaguely aware of Ed now in my face, still yelling at me. I saw him because he was in my face, but I only barely registered it. Man in the hall. I grinned an evil grin at Ed, who for just a second hesitated and backed away a bit. It must have been pretty impressive to waylay his verbal assault. It also stopped a few of the coppers in mid-stride. I laughed and bolted to the doorway that led back into the hall, grabbing a copper's crossbow on the way. I entered the hallway and leveled it, searching for the man that I had walked in on earlier. My intent was to stop the man before he could leave. Maybe he was in league with Bruxia, but right now it was still only a maybe. I quickly scanned the hallway, found him, and brought the crossbow to bear on him as he was about almost to the stairs. The beast inside screamed at me and mentally knocked me out of the way and took control. I watched the bolt leave the crossbow, screaming inside my head, "No." The bolt shot out and passed the knob. It nicked into the overcoat of another shape that had just begun their descent down the stairs. It thudded into place on the banister, nailing the coat with it. It was a good shot. Clean and didn't even touch the man within. The figure stood for a second, wavered, and then fell backwards back onto the landing. He'd been carrying a satchel that fell down beside him. I walked over, Ed following close behind. I was beginning to feel the pure anger radiating off of him. The world became a calm thing when I opened the bag. The book was inside. I kicked the prone figure and wasn't at all surprised to see Harry the Eagle when he rolled over. I heard Ed start a new line of cursing, this time at an officer. He was wondering how the hells he was seeing a man here that was supposed to be locked in a room across town. A cold thought echoed lightly through my mind. Its origin unknown to me. Indeed. How? I held up the satchel and showed the contents to Ed, who sighed, nodded and told me to get it the hell out of here. I was all too happy to oblige. Before I did though, I reached out and took Ed's hand and thanked him. He nodded again, regretting any doubt he'd had in me. When I got outside, the same taxi driver was still there, letting the dual horses cool a bit. Thick tendrils of steam were still rising up from them. I asked him how long till they'd be good for the cobbles again, and he said that if I wasn't in a hurry this time, he was pretty sure that they wouldn't mind a bit of a walk. I told him that I was in no rush now and climbed back up beside him. The ride to Acme was silent and cool. The fog and mist that hung in the air felt good on my skin, and the night sky looked like it might actually clear up before dawn. Once we were out of earshot of the ballroom, the only real sound in the city were the clacking of the horses' hooves against the stone. Tiredness was setting in, but I had one more thing to do tonight and then I'd sleep the sleep of the dead. When we pulled up to the campus, I tried to pay the man, but he refused on account of how much cheddar I'd thrown to him earlier. 'Twas more than enough for 5 rides, young man, and I do appreciate it, he said, and then leaned closer. And it's been quite a while since I got to let the boys here run that fast through town. I should be paying you for that thrill. He winked and asked if I wanted him to wait around. I said no, that I felt like taking a little walk myself so that I could cool off too. He laughed, said goodnight, and rode away. I walked up to the tower and a guard was already standing in the door. He stepped out of my way and let me pass. Merlin was just beyond on the first step with a lantern in hand. He looked a little menacing, even for a scrawny man who worked as a librarian. He had his hood drawn down against the night and looked like something you might find in a fortune teller's deck of cards. I tossed him the bag, which he deftly caught. I eyed him suspiciously and told him to pull off his hood. He did, and I was more than mildly relieved to not find Brookshire under it. I knew that I saw the man fall over the edge of the building, but I still had to see his body for it to register. Merlin thanked me and turned to start climbing the stairs. "That's it," I said. "Aren't you going to even look at the book? Make sure it's the right one." "Why, Mr. Maldoon, I know it is the correct book. I'm the librarian, remember? I knew you were bringing it before you even arrived." He smiled. "And yes, that is that. At least from my point of view. If you need anything further, that is up to the councils. I got a question first. One I haven't been able to work out for myself yet. Do ask. How'd the thief get in? What is it that allows the 11 to get through?" He thought about it for a moment and then shrugged. "A ring. Each of them holds a ring that allows them to transverse the stairway. It's not a perfect system, by any means, but it's the easiest." He stopped and looked at me and gave me a personal thanks for returning the book. That one felt a lot less hollow than the one he'd spit out just a moment ago. He also handed me a slip of paper. It was a receipt for a bank transaction for 1,000 clams that had been moved into my account. This made me smile. "Just doing a job," I replied and walked out. I don't remember much of the walk back to the office. Nor do I remember pulling my bottled friend out of his drawer and taking a few big swigs. I don't remember anything until I start remembering waking up to Ed screaming at me again. This time I was in my skivvies, laying on the couch in my office. Beside it was a pile of soaked clothes. The sun had come up, but just barely. My body hurt, my head ached, and I think that I might have somehow even managed to bruise my soul last night. Ed was unwinding on me from all my activities the previous night. When he finally finished, he plopped down in the chair behind my desk. These meetings between him and I, the ones where he scolded me like he was my mother or something, consisted of me not hearing a damn word of it. Just like he was my mother or something, I tugged on my pants and said, "You're just pissed because I got to do a chase and you didn't." Ed smiled and agreed. I crossed the room and went into the closet. I pulled on some clothes. Ed was still sitting there seething, his arms folded across his chest. He was waiting for an explanation. So I sat back down on the couch with my eyes closed and began detailing out the events, all of them in careful order. When I finished and opened my eyes, he was still sitting there in the same position, the same look on his face. "Honestly, Ed, I never saw a body. Anyone fish him out of the river yet?" "Nope," I asked, "and got two squads of guards down there marching through the muck though. No sign of a body anywhere. With all those rocks, there's just no way a man could survive it, Charlie. And if there's no body, I can't very well charge you with anything. Better hope they don't find one, friend. Criminal or not, the other lords of this city are looking for an neck to fill a noose with." Absent-mindedly, I reached up and rubbed my throat. "Yeah, I just bet they are." We went out and got a couple of plates of breakfast and some coffee. Then he marched me over to the church so that he could show me something. Something he hadn't wanted to tell me about earlier. We were in a landing located just a few feet below where I'd kicked Brookshear over the edge. I could feel the beast inside waking up, licking its lips, and that it was paying close attention now. "This corridor and the length of the church's outer wall." Ed said that the heavy wooden doors at either end were locked tight when they'd found it. Just inside the window, two heavy nails were sunk into the stonework. On one of the nails hung a strip of black silk. It was still wet from the rain. At first I just stood there wondering why Ed was showing me this. Then he said, "We found a boat not far from here. It was near one of the troll hangouts by the bridge. It had a sheet of cloth matching this one, only it was about 50 yards longer. And guess what? One of the corners was ripped off." I felt the beast inside me scream in anger and pain. It was an anger well seasoned with a feeling of regret that I had only been a pawn in Brookshear's game. That was what Brookshear had been trying to tell me towards the end. I'd been nothing but a pawn doing his bidding. About 50 yards of black silk. "Huh? Found in a boat? Was it found upstream or downstream?" I asked. I already knew that it would be downstream. How was Harry, or whoever, supposed to row the boat and hold the silk tight for Brookshear to slide down at the same time? Black silk on a stormy night. I didn't even see it. I just leaned against the cold stone that formed the window. Before I could even ask, Ed answered my next questions. "The troll has split too. The others can't find him. We hit Brookshear's house and all of his personal effects are gone. And we lost the Igor's trail too. You're not going to find Brookshear's body, Ed. And if I ever find him, you won't then either." The end. Well, ladies and gentlemen, that wraps up the story. It's been a good ride, and while it might be a while before you get to listen to my beautiful voice again, this isn't the end of the series. Brett's still working on the next book, although he's being a bit tight-lipped about it. Whatever you do, don't unsubscribe from the podcast, and keep a watch on the blog because I am sure he'll start blabbing about it once it comes closer to completion. Brett would like me to thank you all once again for listening to the podcast. Please tell all your friends about it. Leave a comment or a review anywhere you can. Scribble it on a bathroom wall if you have to. Buy copies of the book to leave in random waiting rooms or as surprise presents. Brett Casto can be found on his writing blog at www.blm3000x.com, or you can email him at Brett, B-R-E-T-T, at that same address. He'd love to hear from you. Thanks again, everyone, for listening. It nearly brings a tear to my little eyesight eye. And as always, see ya, babe. The catchy music you've enjoyed during this podcast is Fast Talking by Kevin MacLeod, incompetech.com, licensed under Creative Commons by Attribution 3.0.